Hello and welcome to Rodcast with me, Lee Durrant. This is the podcast where we learn how Salesforce experts started their careers many years ago and get under the skin of what it's like to work in the Salesforce ecosystem. Ever wondered how someone rose to the ranks of a head of practice at a consultancy or perhaps became a CTO? Then this is the podcast to listen to. We'll also get some real life tips from them and advice on what you can do in your Salesforce career. So, hope you enjoy. Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Rodcast. In this episode, I am having a chat with Richard Ferryman, an industry legend who's been around Salesforce for about 12 years as of today's recording. It's quite an interesting one for you guys if any of you are thinking of starting a business in the Salesforce ecosystem. Richard started his own Salesforce consultancy company many years ago. So he talks quite openly about what it's like to build a Salesforce consultancy from scratch, the ups and downs, and the quite honest about the mistakes that he made, and if he could do it again, what he would do. The 18-hour days, the what it's like to interview people in the Salesforce ecosystem, which there's always opportunities out there for those guys. So this is what it's like really to start and grow a Salesforce practice. And also he talks about his passion for what he's doing at the moment. So it's really good chat. Hope you enjoy it. So hello, Richard, and thanks for joining us, mate, today on the podcast. How are you getting on?
Yeah, very well, thank you. And you?
I am all right. Yeah, looking forward to this one because you and I go back a long way. I don't know how long, but it's got to be more than 10 years, isn't it?
I think we're about 12 years or so now.
Oh, my God, blimey. And I think people that listen to this will quite like your journey because you've done quite a lot of, correct me if I'm wrong, obviously, different things in the world of Salesforce. So that's what this is about, really. It's just a bit of a chat about your journey from, how you got into it, what you've done to be where you are now. So, I'll fire some questions at you then. So the first one would really be, what was you doing before? Well, what was your career plan up until the point where you got into Salesforce, if you know what I mean? Did you get into Salesforce by accident and the sort of journey before Salesforce, if you don't mind?
Yeah, absolutely. So I started out in Visio before it was a Microsoft product. So worked for Visio. From Visio, we then took that through to it being bought out by Microsoft. I was part of that transition team. Went over to Seattle working with the Microsoft team there, and then came back and promptly went and worked for IBM Software Group.
Ah, yes.
So Microsoft wasn't at that point where I wanted to go, but I liked the ethos of IBM. I liked the branding of IBM, and even now I still can't go to a meeting without a blue suit and a white shirt, which was very much an IBM way of doing things. they taught me a lot about process, a lot about sales, a lot about how somebody like me can get the most out of a meeting, and a really enjoyable part of my career. I then fell out, was offered something even better and the grass is greener, and took that, but actually, I jumped a few times through different emerging technologies, which was okay and it was good. And the emergence of cloud back then, the emergence of very early AI, the emergence of big data was all coming in. How were people starting to use that? I worked for a company which had an overlay to the old green screens. That was very much actually putting a web front end on things. So this really is going back some time.
Yeah. Wow. And it was always from the actual roles you were doing were very much sales, business development, that sort of stuff, were they?
Sales, business development, absolutely. But I knew that I enjoyed the pre-sales, the BA work as much as I did the sales work. So I was starting to look at what was next. I started to work for a process company back in my hometown, funnily enough. And that was going incredibly well. And then the backside dropped out of the financial markets and we hit the crash.
All right, so we're up to 2008 now, clearly.
2008, yeah. And I think a lot of people at that point saw their pipelines disintegrate. Nobody really knew what was going on and what to do, and unfortunately that ended with having to leave the role that I was being incredibly successful at. Had turned a lot of money for them in that year. Unfortunately, with the crash in the type of markets, aerospace, aviation, etc., it really did hurt that business. Thankfully, they're still going and now going very strong.
So that was, sorry to jump in, is that when you got first into Salesforce then, around about 2008?
Yeah, so I then went and worked for a small managed IT company in Old Street in London. Completely different to anything I'd done before. I started to help to run that business, and the owner went out and moved to Australia. Really left the UK business to function well. It was doing okay. The crash was there. It was centered around charities.
Yeah.
So very, very different as to what we were doing. We started to look out there as far as what was on the market, and the owner of that business made an introduction for me to the Salesforce Foundation, which was the charity piece, and I believe that's probably where we had our first conversations to make our first hire.
Yeah, you're probably right. I'm trying to think back that far, but yeah, so basically, you were introduced to them because Salesforce was an up and coming thing. Is that why?
Yeah, there was a lot of on prem, there was a lot of databases, a lot of people trying to do fundraising or trying to do people management, mailing lists, etc. And we saw Salesforce as a tool that they could use. I started to have meetings around the Salesforce ecosystem, started to look for potential opportunities. So it was very much feeling the market. There were only a couple of people in the Salesforce Foundation at that time. Salesforce, 12 years ago, was still relatively new to the UK market.
Yeah.
So started to get out there. It was very much about, finding opportunities, working directly with the Salesforce guys. It was a lot of fun, actually. And there's a couple of people in particular that, really did worked well with and started to build that business. I think by the end of the first year, we looked at somewhere around 800K of revenue. Mm. And with that, I decided that I would try and do it myself, and my business was created.
Yeah. So that's just to pause on that a minute. So you're looking at your LinkedIn at the moment, and I'm sure people look at that. You had a whole career really before Salesforce, really, didn't you?
Oh, absolutely.
So it's obviously led you to that point, which is great. And then what you did there was that was the first partner in the UK to focus on the charity sector, which sounds mental now when you look at how many companies are out there doing it. But that then led you, as you say, to then deciding to do it on your own, which I know a lot of people listening to this will probably have that. Well, either they have it now or they might have it in the future.
Don't do it. Yeah.
It's
way back then it was, when I, and it was the foresight of the guy that I was working for before to see Salesforce, see that it had, there was an opportunity, there was existing systems out there, Razor's Edge and things like this from Blackboard that, were I suppose struggling a little bit within that marketplace. It was very much on premise. But then, we were also up against the UK CIO, government CIO, saying that cloud was never going to take off.
Oh, yeah.
There was everybody saying that cloud was a waste of time, and what the hell were you doing looking at cloud? Just, on premise.
I remember that, yeah.
Just the most expensive way of doing IT there is.
Yeah.
Even now, we still come across, some people that will only work from using on premise. They still don't trust cloud, which is madness because your entire world is based on the cloud. You walk down the street and, you know, your data is being collected by the cloud. So it was very much a big decision for me, for my family, to actually go all in and decide that we would do that. I think the first deal I did was with Battersea.
Oh, wow. Good one to go straight in with, isn't it?
And a good one to go straight into. And they were lovely.
Can I ask very quickly, did you start your company on your own? Did you do it with anybody else? Did you get funding? You know, all that sort of stuff. Because it's not easy just to go, do you know what, I'm going to quit this job when no doubt you're being paid very well and start a company. You know, you got to have, because there's a long period, I'm guessing, of not earning any money.
There's a very long period. There's a very long period of risk. And I seem to, the last 12 years have been completely about risk and the degrees of risk that you're willing to take. To my detriment, I suppose, I've always taken the risks, and, you know, that was good at times and terrible at others. You know, you have to have the mindset that you are prepared to lose everything. You have to be the gambler. And when you're gambling with your family and your house and everything else, you have to be very careful of that. I think, you know, 12 years ago, to start your own business, to be the entrepreneur, wasn't commonplace in any way, shape or form. I think it is now. I think every man and his dog wants to start a business and sees that as a way to do it.
Yeah.
And it was scary times. And I think, you know, you have to be the salesman, you have to be the accountant, you have to be the finance guy, you have to be the recruiter, you have to be, you know, every single hat, and you have to play them every single day.
Yep.
But the fact that LinkedIn's there, the fact that you can reach out to people, you have to have the confidence to do that. You have to literally go to the opening of a crisp packet if you feel that you might get your name out there. I used to turn up everywhere with my T-shirt on, you know, the corporate T-shirt and everything else. But if they knew that it was me in my back bedroom, you know, would they have really had those conversations with me?
Yeah.
And there's some amazing people in the ecosystem that spent a lot of time, that would sit, just meet for coffee, just go and have a beer, just go and you know, have a chat. You were certainly one of those. You know, how could you help? What could you do? You were there. You and Teresa to say, okay, well, you know, if we're going to do this, let's be partners in a way of, you know, finding you the right people and making it easy for you to take those people on. And that relationship's now, you know, been 10 years or so.
Yeah, but what was the, so you mentioned about Battersea, so we'll come back to that. And so, how did you get them as a client then? How did that come about?
So, funnily enough, there was I was working at the time with a couple of people from another consultancy, a much larger consultancy, and we went into it together. I fronted it, but I had them as the backup.
Okay.
So, you know, it was again, meetings, conversations, people. You know, I think we were, when I first started, I was one of 70 partners in the UK. I think there's now a couple of thousand.
Are you including like ISVs in that? Because that sounds like quite a big, everything. There was, I was going to say, 70 sounds like a lot, but
70 of us in the ecosystem at that time in the UK. You know, I was focused again on the nonprofits, and, you know, there was a couple new partners coming in, and, you know, there was enough business to go around. We had a very competitive attitude.
Yeah, I know.
Everybody else, but there we go.
Yeah.
But it was good and it was fun. And, you know, the first couple of years, you know, recruiting is hard, finding the right people is hard. Maximizing that skill base, you know, having people to believe in somebody who is literally running this either out of his bedroom or, you know, slowly but surely out of an office at the top of a set of iron steps, which, funnily enough, yesterday got completely knocked down and annihilated for new buildings.
Really?
Bad thing, yeah.
Yeah, I've been there a few times.
It is hard, you know. The service industry is difficult, and people talk about, well, I'll get into it and then somebody will invest in me. It just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
You know, I went round 100 plus investors pitching a services business and they just weren't interested. You know, it has to be about, you know, thinking about product, thinking about a problem that you want to solve, thinking about, you know, looking at the marketplace that you're working in and finding the unique aspects to that. But the problem again with that, certainly on a services industry, it's like the plumber with a leaking tap in his house until the day he retires. It's the fact that actually, you know, you want to build that stuff internally, but you've got to take your guys off of that project to put them on an internal project. And, you know, by the time you get through that, actually, it's a really difficult thing to balance. And that's why I think there are so many partners out there, but they're very purely services and they're going from project to project to project, you know, and in some cases doing an absolutely brilliant job, in other cases, not so great. I think as well, Salesforce isn't just put Salesforce in and get the features and the benefits out. You've got to understand business if you're selling to a business, if you're trying to transform a business on Salesforce. You know, I would say to anybody who's looking to do a Salesforce project, and I say it all the time, is the people that are coming in to do your discovery, make sure they're challenging you. You know, and I think that is where, you know, you survive. You have to adapt. And we found that very quickly through time that, you know, we couldn't just be technical and put Salesforce in. Mm. We had to be a business helping to transform other businesses. And I think, you know, that's how we did rather well for a long time.
And in that space as well, there must have been some really good projects that where, you know, because you're working with places like Battersea, where you feel like the project has really helped in some way do something good, as opposed to just another CRM system for a sales company or a sales department. Do you know what I mean?
I agree with that to a certain extent. I think, yes, if you're working in a non-profit type environment, you've got to be careful. They've got very limited budgets, but I think everybody does. You can make a difference. It's not the easiest sector to work in. But at the same time, yes, you do get a lot back from it. And, you know, I spent a lot of time over in Kenya at St. Martin's School, which is a big project that Salesforce have been party to for a long, long time. But going out and, you know, teaching Salesforce and investing time and energy into that school has been life-changing, quite honestly.
Brilliant.
But I think it's at the same time, though, that you have to, whatever market you're in, whether it be finance, whether it be aviation, whether it be charity, at the end of the day, it can't always be about, well, they're a charity, so we'll do it for this or we'll do it for that. It's got to be about their outcomes and making sure they get the right solution.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes, you know, and through the last 10 years or so, the charity to business has clouded. I think you've got to just set forth and look for the outcomes on a Salesforce project and make sure that you meet those outcomes, whoever you're working for.
So that the Kenyan school you just referenced, is that one of your most, would that be your most proud project, which is one of my questions for later, but we can talk about it now?
It wasn't really a project. That was more volunteering. I think, if you're looking at, proud projects, it'll probably be Battersea. There was a lot went on in there, a huge amount. Across the board now, with, you know, if you go in and you're looking for a dog, all of that through Salesforce, right down to, blood tests for the animals and everything else is taken down the Salesforce.
And you guys put that in, did you? You done that for them?
Yeah.
Cool.
So I think it's obviously over the last few years, you know, I haven't been party to it, but it's obviously evolved and everything else. So, there were some very, very good projects. There were some not so good projects and ones that were very difficult and everything else. But I think that's the same in any business. And I think, you know, as it came through and you know, that business closed, it was time to move on.
Yeah. Okay. So before we go into that bit, something just popped into my head. Did you, at one Salesforce World Tour, do I seem to remember you being part of Guide Dogs for the Blind and that project or that initiative where they were walking around, the dogs were there, weren't they? Do you remember that?
Yeah, I think that was after my time, but it was certainly we did some work for guide dogs and puppy management and everything else. So yeah, there was some good ones in there.
Puppy management on Salesforce.
Yeah.
What?
So everything from conception right the way through to the dogs actually being given to their new owners. Obviously, the dogs have to be a very particular temperament, and so guide dogs breed their dogs. You know, certainly there at the start of that project, it was all about actually, you know, the process of going through the conception between the dog and the bitch and making sure that there's a puppy at the end of it. Yeah, I think there was an interesting project, but actually, I think that was finished off by the old company that I'd started way back when.
Oh, okay. So before we go beyond the company that you owned, a question that I don't ask many people to do this because it's usually about your career and everything, but I'd be quite interested to know how difficult you found it to find good talent in the Salesforce space, even though we're talking about, 2011, I'm looking at LinkedIn again, 2011 to 2017, you were the MD of that company. How difficult is it? Because you also mentioned earlier on a little saying you said earlier on about the grass always seems greener, which in the Salesforce space is definitely a thing, isn't it? Because you've got, you know, the likes of me and everyone else now. Just if you've got Salesforce experience, people are just all over you, aren't they? So it must be difficult to find them. And I'm not necessarily talking about your experience with recruiters. I just mean generally trying to find good people that can do the job, that are interested in working at a consultancy and want, you know, want to work with you and do a good job. What was that like? How, because I kind of know the answer to this, but I'm just interested to get your opinion on how that was.
I think Salesforce, if you think about Salesforce all that time ago, there was a very limited pool of people who knew Salesforce. So it was, you know, in some cases, the fact of bringing people from normally a Java background would fit Apex rather well. We were quite heavy into coding back then, where now coding is a lot more limited. I think it's certainly a lot more about configuration now.
Yeah.
I think finding and more so retaining the talent is hard work, is difficult. Keeping those people motivated, they're getting a phone call from people like you every single day, even every single hour of the day. You know, I've got this great new opportunity, I've got a great new opportunity, which actually it's a shame because it's hard for them. The minute you put Salesforce on LinkedIn, it's an open door. You know, and it actually takes, it's very hard work, certainly for a good candidate, because they're being hit every 3 seconds. You know, that's my negative about recruitment. Yeah. And you know, when you're managing that, you're trying to manage, you know, the sneakiness of recruiters, you know, who are constantly doing it, but everybody's got a job to do. And, you know, it's why I think from day one, I stuck with you guys, because I felt that you had a different way of working in that way. It was about relationships. It was about knowing people in the industry. It was about that. I think to actually get that talent, you know, it evolves continuously as it moves away from, you know, a lot of code into a small implementation, a lot more configuration. We're back now to business analysis. We're back to understanding what a business problem is, back to understanding how to solve that business problem from a technical perspective. But Salesforce isn't technology to me. Salesforce is transformational change. Mm. You know, coming away from doing things in a very manual or, you know, protracted way, and you're using Salesforce to actually align your process. Before you can put it in, what is your process? What do you do? How do you do it? And to find people who can challenge that in a business environment, to find people who can challenge a CEO of a 40, 50, 60 million pound company and say, well, why do you do it like that?
Yeah.
Hard. And, you know, there's very particular people that can do that. And, you know, when you find them, you hang on to them for all you've got.
So I think I remember having a conversation with you a couple of years ago about, you know, that you almost had to get to a point where you accepted that your lifespan of an employee was maybe, if you were lucky, 18 months, 2 years, because of what we just, you know, what you just mentioned. Do you remember that conversation?
There's a different approach as well that, you know, and I'm certainly seeing it in, you know, people who, you know, are doing what I did 10 years ago that are doing it now, you know, or looking for a role. There is, I suppose we've got a market that's incredibly saturated. We've got Salesforce growing at a ridiculous rate. We've got, you know, trying to find those great people out there. Normally they've set up a business themselves. They're trying to do the entrepreneurial thing. That lifespan is, yeah, it is difficult and certainly dependent on your location. Do you have what's your working policies? Can you work from home? You know, do you have a ping pong table? Is there a bar attached to it? You know, all of these things, work is so much more social now. And I think for the smaller businesses that can't compete with, you know, a different style of working. And that's always going to be difficult for the 1, 2, 3 man bands, because actually you're paying people the same as somebody who's saying, well, come and work for me. And, you know, it's the Google-esque environment. Come and have some fun.
Yeah.
You know, so I think I've heard of, just in the last few weeks, I've heard of 5 or 6 partners that have ceased trading just simply because they can't find people.
Really?
Or the right. Which is a shame, but I think the problem again with the Salesforce industry is that everybody is trying to do it. So, you know, every developer is thinking, well, I'll go and set up my own business and make more money doing it. The problem is we're now at a saturated place. And I think that will consolidate as a market. You know, it consolidated about 5 years ago with Tequila and Blue Wolf and some of the others. I think that round of consolidation is going to have to happen again at some point, just to reduce the number of partners that are set out there for Salesforce. I think Salesforce themselves as well are becoming a lot more brutal.
Yeah. can they get more brutal? Yeah. Okay.
You know, they've got to, you know, they're doing the right thing. You know, you need the certs. You know, we're dealing with a particular partner manager at the moment who is excellent, but he's driving us very, very hard to make sure that, you know, we're doing all the things that we need to do to make sure that there is customer success. And I like that. I like the fact that it's doing that. And they've also, Salesforce are also changing, being a lot more conciliatory with partners and wanting to work with the right partners. But you've also got to know how to work with Salesforce. And I think that it's certainly taken me 12 years to work out how to do that.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, you know, that owning your own company was I'm guessing a great experience and journey, but where you're at now is sort of different, isn't it? You've decided to almost go back out and just do what you love, you know, not on your own. I appreciate you're working somewhere now. So what was the thought process there? Was it like, you know what, I just want to go and just take the stress away and just let someone else worry about all that for a bit and, you know, help?
Yeah, like for many different reasons, I closed my business, you know, some very personal. Others were, you know, the marketplace, I think some inexperience. I think, you know, it's very, very hard to run, to manage and to make a business profitable. I think, you know, the many, many sleepless nights and pacing at 3 o'clock in the morning, as anybody doing it will testify to.
Yeah.
So, you know, because of certain aspects of my child's health, I decided to not do 18 hours again every single day, 7 days a week. And you know, and that's what it is. And for anybody wanting to start a business, get used to it. That's what it is. There is no other way of doing it.
It's funny, isn't it, as well? Do you know, it's, I'm talking from my experience a little bit. It's hard to stop doing it. Do you not think? I know you had a very good reason, but do you find it now quite difficult to kind of switch off after 8 hours and watch a bit of telly?
I work now because I enjoy doing it. If I'm going to work late, or I'm going to do a Sunday night, or, you know, last weekend I worked all weekend, because actually what I'm doing right now is exciting. And what I'm doing right now with VRP is something I feel quite different to what I've been able to do before. And actually focus on some of the ideas I had through the years. I'm being given the challenge to go and put them into action.
That's good to know, because you are, people won't know this, people that don't know you won't know that you are an ideas machine, aren't you?
Well, hopefully, you know, I think what we're trying to do is not something that hasn't been done before, but I want to do it, you know, and certainly watch this space for that, working very closely with Salesforce, my leadership team, you know, they're giving me the breadth and depth to be able to go and do it. And, you know, that makes you want to work, you know. It's not a stressful 18 hours. It's a fun 18 hours. But yeah, I can still switch off when I need to and go and be with one of the four kids and go and enjoy and do whatever. You know, even have a holiday. My goodness me.
Well, that's, they'll give you, well, that is, you know, that's another thing. I think that some people, you know, they look at the success of companies and assume it's just going to be easy, but you're absolutely right. It's hard work. You can't necessarily go on holiday.
We could do an entire podcast on what
we probably could. And I don't want to scare people off, but because you know, you want that
not to do as far as your business, but you know, if you know, I think that there's a big fallacy out there about I can start a business, Salesforce will buy me, and I'll make millions. It just doesn't happen. It just isn't like that.
I was going to say, unless, you know, you mentioned about developers and maybe if they come up with some app that's not yet been done, but I mean, we're getting to the point now where we're surely running out of ideas, aren't we? Everything's.
I don't think we'll ever run out of ideas. I think the Salesforce platform is can still be adapted to many different things. You know, many different apps that still could be created on the Salesforce platform. You know, it's expanding its reach across businesses. It's not CRM, it is a platform. You know, we've got commerce now, marketing, sales, service, you know, the whole plethora of business front end tools and now back end tools that Salesforce can well and truly handle. But as we grow forward, you know, we're getting very excited at the moment about AI, about voice AI within Salesforce, you know, standing in a shop and being able to tell Alexa to, you know, order next week's consignment or whatever. And behind that, Salesforce doing all of that work in an automated fashion just by voice. We really are starting to look at some really exciting things on the platform. So, you know, there are then 1,000 more apps that could be fitted around that, but you've got to get there first. You've got to have the means and the ability to be able to do it, and you've got to get it released and out on the Salesforce platform very quickly. But if you do it well, you know, there's some huge, huge dividends to be paid if you get it right, but you know, you might be 1 in 1,000 that get it right.
Yeah, yeah. You'll be a good guy to ask this, actually. What's your take on the Alibaba acquisition recently? Do you know much about that? Is it something to be excited about?
I don't know. I haven't seen that.
I'll have to look at that and make sure I got that right. But it was announced a few days ago, I think, so I haven't even had a chance to really look at it. But I was going to ask you what you're excited about, but I think you probably covered that, to be fair. Thinking about it from point of view again of people that might be listening to this that are, you know, looking for work, or at some point they're going to be, you know, interviewing and stuff like that. What was your interview style like when you had people come and see you? What was that like for you? Was it all about how hands-on they were or what they came across. And I know what you just said about being able to push back is probably very, very much the personality, but how did you do that? And so that people that are listening can perhaps see it from the point of view of the interviewer.
I think interviews are interviews need to be a showcase. Interviews need to be a very two-way business meeting. Gone are the days of sitting there with a panel of five people quizzing you until you fall into a pool of sweat and give up. It's, you know, people don't or shouldn't work in that way around interviews. I knew within minutes if I was going to hire somebody or not hire somebody on meeting them. I think there's still the fact that you come prepared, you research the business that you're coming to. I used to do a lot of lectures, come workshops at Hackney College, and I used to call them shiny shoes. If nothing else, walk in with a pair of shiny shoes, because actually it says that you're prepared for that interview, that you respect the fact that you're walking into somebody's business, that you've done your research, that you have questions, that go in with a pad, with a pen and pad, and actually you're writing questions, you're treating it as a meeting, you're challenging what they're doing. Don't just go and answer questions and then at the end walk out again. It doesn't matter if you're going for a tech job, a sales job, or whatever. Sit there in front of that interviewer. You are interviewing them for you as much as they are interviewing for them. And yeah, if you get that right, it's the perfect interview. You know, I've had interviews of people who've turned up in jeans and t-shirt and just said, well, you know, do you want me to start tomorrow? You know, there was a very short silence and the door closed.
I can, and based on what you told us right at the beginning, your background, I can understand that you're still going to want people in a suit and tie. But yet some companies, believe it or not, I've genuinely had a company tell me this, if someone turns up for interview wearing a suit and tie, then they won't get the job because they don't understand our culture. They wanted them to turn up in ripped jeans and, you know, and flip-flops or whatever.
So that may be a newfangled way of doing things. I still think that, you know, if you're going to go for a serious job and a serious business, that, you know, you don't get ties or a thing of the past, absolutely. But, yeah, but you want to be smart. You know, you want to be prepared for an interview. If you're walking in flip-flops and somebody takes you on, you know, fair enough, you know, well done. But are you actually going for a serious job, or are they going to stick you in the pool with everybody else? you know, you have to shine. Your career in that company starts on day one, and that's the interview. You know, to my detriment, I think in some cases I wanted to push people. I wanted to give them as many opportunities to go up in their career. There were some that just didn't want to do that. They were really happy just doing the job that they've come for. That's all they wanted to do. They wanted nothing else other than that. And they just wanted to do that job. Others wanted to climb a ladder and to learn and to do other things, which is fantastic. But, you know, I still will always believe that it doesn't matter who you are, what your background, etc. You know, university degrees don't. I'm not interested in all of that. But what I'm interested in is if somebody came in to ask for a job and they look smart, and they had their questions, they had done their research, they came with some optimism and some enthusiasm, then they were 99% there.
Brilliant.
If they walk in looking at the ground and, you know, it's, well, you know, whatever, you know, that is going to be their attitude in your company. And the best companies survive because their employees are committed and want to work.
Yeah. Brilliant tip.
So, you know, if the flip-floppers all want to go together, you know.
Flip-floppers. Yeah. Well, yes, it's a great tip. I mean, it's common sense, isn't it, really? But you'd be surprised the amount of people that still do go to interviews and have the assumption of, well, you know what, I'm a Salesforce expert. I've got five other interviews going on, so, you know, do your best.
But, you know, and that's great. But, you know, they're always, you know, that's, I think there is a point, and I think we're already starting to see it, that, you know, you it's not that easy anymore. People are a lot more choosy when it comes to who they're going to get to work for them. And I think, again, you know, it's predicated by lots of people setting up, you know, their businesses and everything else. And then, I don't know. I think at some point it will come to an end, but, you know, we'll have to see.
Cool. I can't believe it's 45 minutes already. So I appreciate it. I've got to let you go. I normally ask what people are excited about. And you mentioned you're loving what you're doing at the moment with VRP. So if you want to wrap it up with a very quick kind of what you're doing and why you're excited by it, which I think you've already touched on, to be fair, then.
We've got 300 plus, Salesforce configurators, coders, etc., in our Belarus and Poland offices. These are people who have worked on everything from Facebook to Coca-Cola to LinkedIn to Rolls-Royce. You know, they are awesome. And I think what I'm enjoying is bringing that awesomeness out, as far as, you know, they've been almost, you know, there is this fallacy about, well, if they're offshore and they're in an Eastern European country, then, you know, they're not going to be as good as somebody in the UK, which I just think is an absolute load of nonsense.
Yeah.
You know, the only difference is there can be a slight language barrier, but, you know, if they speak Russian as their native tongue, and, you know, 99.9% of my colleagues speak English sometimes better than I do. You know, they are, it's an incredible hub of talent and enthusiasm. And so we're looking at, you know, certainly exploiting that. And there's a lot of our customers in the UK doing that. We are working very closely with Salesforce to make sure that we're doing repeatable quick starts, getting people on multiple different clouds, expanding what people are already doing. It really is an exciting time for VRP. And, you know, the leadership team, chosen from, you know, ex-Tequila, we've got ex-Salesforce, we've got, you know, the CEO's an entrepreneur, all looking now to build what is going to be the next global consultancy platinum partner. And it's really, really exciting to be in on the ground floor and watch it grow.
Honestly, Richard, you know this anyway, you know, we love you, but you're the sort of person that I could just talk to for hours. And I, this may be the first of many with you, if you don't mind, because you're always great. And your journey from what you've, you know, from before Salesforce to where you are now, it's been really good. I'm really pleased that you're so happy.
If nothing else, it's definitely been emotional.
Yeah, yeah. No, and you know, people can look you up, and you know, I know you're quite open to accepting connection requests and stuff like that. So what I'll do at the end of this is probably, well, people can find you on LinkedIn anyway. You're on there, aren't they? But I'll share your LinkedIn with people and stuff like that. But thanks for being such a brilliant guest, Matt. As I knew you would be, and it sounds like you're in for a very exciting next few years with what you're doing. So I'm looking forward to keeping in touch with you on that one. But mate, thanks for a great interview, and hope to speak to you soon.
Thank you very much.
So my thanks there to Richard Ferriman for what I suspect might be the first of quite a few podcasts with him, as he's obviously got a lot to say about it. His journey was brilliant. Hopefully you got some great information there, and some takeaways for me with that, with him, were, you know, if you're going on interviews, which no doubt you will be at some point in your career, then do your preparation, dress smart, have questions ready on a pad, treat the interview as a two-way interview. You know, you're talking to them just as much as they're talking and interviewing you. Show enthusiasm. I mean, it sounds obvious, but obviously that feedback from Richard there is quite important, I think. Also, I think if you're looking to start your own Salesforce business, then just understand that it's hard. For every company that probably succeeds, God knows how many fail. And as Richard discussed in there, 18-hour days, 7-day weeks, it's tough. Tough to find good Salesforce talent as well, from what he was saying. Not just tough to find them, but tough to keep them, especially with all of the opportunities out there in the Salesforce world, where it just seems that the grass is always greener somewhere. So yeah, really, really good interview. Hope you enjoyed it. I will be sharing online all the details with the show notes and what have you. So keep your eye out for that. Of course, please, any comments, if you want to make them, that would be great. And if you could share them with your friends as well, that would be fantastic. And look forward to the next podcast, which will be soon. Thanks very much.